You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hi, so welcome back to Embodied People. And this week's podcast is one that I have been thinking about for a little while. And I think what I've been thinking about with it is how much to talk about my own personal practices and how much to guide you towards your own practices. And so what we're going to be talking about today is how to design a movement practice. Some tips, some tricks, some ways to create movement rituals, movement practices, movement mantras for yourself. That bring you into your moving body and bring the wisdom and wise counsel possible through your moving body more to the fore in your life. And this is something that these movement, personal movement practices have been a really common ask. Clients, friends, and even when I run the retreat in Maine, which I'm doing one the first week in June, even when I run the retreat in Maine, the desire for people to have a collection or handful of movement practices that bring them home to themselves, that bring them into their feeling full, moving self, that maybe bring a sense of more comfort and more ease into their bodies. It's a really common thing that people are looking for. And designing a movement practice for somebody is actually fairly complex. And so in today's podcast, we're going to talk about some of the different complexities and considerations, and even some ways or places that if you were going to create a movement practice for yourself that you might start, that you might go about making this happen. And so the other thing I want to mention as we start to get into it today is this has come up again for me. I just recently my boyfriend and I both listened to NPR's The Body Electric podcast, and the central idea of that podcast is that our working lives, our home lives, our current lives, mostly we are sitting. We are sitting behind a computer. We are sitting in front of a television. We are sitting when we drive our cars. We are a sitting culture. And this isn't the way it always was. Some 500 years ago, they say people didn't even have chairs. And now we might sit for 2 or 3 hours without getting up before even noticing it. And the podcast talks about the toll that takes on us physically, and looks at really basic health metrics like blood pressure and heart rate even. And the research showed that people who
got up every 25 minutes and walked slowly, not vigorously. They didn't pump iron. They walked slowly for 5 minutes and then sat back down. By the end of the day, they were less exhausted. They continued to be productive and invigorated, and they had much, much, much lower heart rate, much lower blood pressure, much more stabilized blood sugar. And it wasn't from supplements, it wasn't from changing what they were eating, it was from getting up and engaging in a gentle, moving, walking practice. And this really makes sense to me. My life is a fairly moving life. I am teaching dance and movement throughout the day, as well as boxing. I'm also in the studio preparing those classes. I also have movement rituals and practices that I do. And yet, I still can sit and knit for 2 or 3 hours at times, or especially when I'm doing something like I am right now, which is writing a second edition of a book and getting ready to write another book, that I can get totally absorbed in those writing processes in a way that sometimes hours can go by before I really realize it. And so walking is great, as the podcast, NPR's podcast, brings up, but people might want more options than walking. They might want other ways to sense into and experience and move their bodies besides walking. And I think that the other thing that I want to say about this is, like, say you did have this inkling, like, I think I'd feel better if I had more conscious, more deliberate movement practices, ways that I could bring myself into movement that would feel good, that would help me feel like myself. Where would you start? And when I look around at the movement offerings out in the world, you know, people might go to things that they would do in yoga. So downward dog or Adho Mukha Shavasana or standing Tadasana, or some of the warrior poses like the Virabhadrasanas. But that is a style, that's a system that exists outside of our bodies that we sort of move ourselves into, that we hopefully can fill the shape of those postures from the inside out. You also might run. I mean, running is a great way to feel yourself move quick through space. It can feel really good to sort of hurl your mass from one place to another. Also, of course, walking. There's more gentle practices, like something like Tai Chi or Qigong, which has a lot of shaking and is based on moving energy through and around the body. And Tai Chi is a similar, not so much shaking, more brushing or moving through the space around the body, like stirring up the movement, the energetic space around and through the body. You could also lift weights, like pump some iron. But say that you had a sense that there was more, or you wanted more than those options. And so how would you get started? What might you do? The first thing that I have to say about designing a movement practice is how you start the practice. So if it's hard, like if it's something that involves, maybe you start by getting down on the ground and doing whatever, 15 push-ups, if that's possible for you. That actually may be a deterrent, because it asks you to work hard right away. It doesn't ask you to enter through positive sensation. It's not an easy start. And so, yeah, you may be sort of masochistic, and that might be the way to do it. But I actually suggest to people that whatever it is that they design, that the beginning of it, the way that it initiates, has some sort of sensory pleasure that is easy to start, and then one thing leads to another, which leads to another, and the harder things, the things that are less inviting, that are less tolerable to you, that you move into those later. And so here are a couple ways that I have started my movement practices, and I will describe them to you in hopes that you come along with me, and maybe one of these is a good place for you to start. So the first one, and this was actually taught to my friend Lucas Konecki. It was taught to me by him as a part of some neuro training. And so for this one, the fingertips of both the right and the left hand meet the top of the head. And so my fingers are lining up on my head along the sagittal suture. So from my forehead where my pinkies, all the way towards the back of my head where my pointer fingers are. And they meet each other. And what I'm doing is I'm very gently imagining that I'm pulling the skull of my head slightly apart. Like I'm opening the sagittal suture. And it's almost like I'm taking the pressure off my brain. And as I do this, I feel the muscles of my upper back, like my trapezius muscles, the ones between my shoulder blades, I feel them start to relax. And I even feel the space around where my lungs and heart are in my spine. I feel that get more fluid and soft. And so that's the first one, is using my fingertips to separate the crown of my head. Another one that I've often done that's easy, that feels really good, is to trace from my thumb along my arm, along the front of my chest, along my belly into my pubic bone. And as I'm doing that, I'm imagining connecting my thumb through to my lower belly, and then I reverse the pathway. My lower belly up along the chest, and then out the arm to my thumb. And then at my thumb, I give a squeeze and a release. And then I do the same thing to the other side, from the pinky along the back of the arm, along the shoulder blade or scapula, into my lower back and tail, and then reversing the action along the back, along the shoulder blade, along the arm to my pinky finger, give the pinky a little tug and release. And so what I'm doing with those is I'm tracing these pathways of connection so that my hands feel their connection and the support into my belly and into my tail, and then back out. And I'll do that on both sides and feel how my shoulders feel softer and more dropped and supported into my rib cage. And it also helps me feel the width across the back of my body, which can feel really good, like through having the support of the width, then the front of my chest can open back up. So one other one, I've already said two. One is the top of the head. The other one is tracing fingertips into tail and back out. And then the third place that's often really easy to start for me is a lung stretch. And the effect that this can have, among other things, is it literally allows our bodies to get more oxygen. And our bodies are not machines. They're not like a car. It's not like I can swap out one carburetor for another and it's going to run better. I mean, we do that a little bit in medicine, but we're living systems, and so there's more happening. But our brains require oxygen. Our whole being requires oxygen. And when our lungs are not able to expand to their fullest, when they're not able to get the full amount of oxygen that they need. So this is a stretch that I learned actually through Z Health, which is applied neuroscience. And then I've brought my Laban lens too. And so for this one, you can do it sitting. It's probably the easiest, where put your hands on the back of your legs, like behind your knees, and send your chest and your spine so far back, like further than you've ever gone. Like you're almost like from the inside out, you're opening your vertebrae. And do this for about 30 seconds. And then reverse that. So now use your hands to pull your heart and chest through your arms. Opening, 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 like pulling the inside forward and out, going further than you've ever gone. And hold that for about 30 seconds. And then your body will know that it's safe to do that. And you can do that a couple more times, 30, 40 seconds. One image that I have for this that I often use in my classes, like I'll sing to my classes, is the song, This Little Light of Mine. I don't know the tune. I'm gonna let it shine. Well, it's almost like right in the middle of your chest, there's a light. And as you do these stretches for the lungs forward and back, it's like you're sending the beams of that light inside of you out beyond your body into the vast, whether it's hills or city or desert, wherever you are, you're beaming your inner light out, out, out beyond your body. And that helps you go further. It helps your lungs stretch more fully. Now, some other ways I've adapted it is to go to one side. So, and I might shift putting both my left and my right hand on the outside of my right leg and then send my ribs and lungs to the left side, stretching, and then switching to the other side, so both hands, and thinking the light goes through my ribs out to the beyond in those two places. So all of those can feel really good. They're like an invitation to start. And the hope is, as you design your movement ritual or practice, that you can then keep going. Another thing about a movement practice is you want some things that you can anchor, that like you know that these are there, and you don't have to think too much about it, but you can just get started. And you also want it to be able to be adaptable as you change, as your needs change psychologically, as they change physically, as the needs of your day change, that you have places that it can morph and adapt. And even built into a ritual, you may have, this is how I start, these are specific, and then some places where you listen for what feels like it would feel good and you try those things. And that may be more advanced, that may take some time to develop, that you have a practice of listening and noticing in your body what is being asked and then being able to bring that forward, to move in a way that you are honoring that. One thing that I find that's really helpful about movement rituals is if there's different time lengths, so perhaps you want one that's short, like this is what, these two things have to happen or I don't feel like myself. And you have one that's longer. So say you have a really busy morning and yet you still want your movement practice. Maybe as you get the coffee going, you have two things that you know you can do and then you can be off in your day. But if say you have an hour or say you have 30 minutes, you have these other things that you can also bring in. So you may have one that's like an accordion, like you can shift the amount of time it takes, and these things are required, and these things are nice when it happens, or that can also be really helpful. So when I work with somebody to build their movement ritual and practice, one of my first questions that I ask them is, what do you want to get out of it? What is it that you hope to gain from having this movement practice? And I'm often asking this question in multiple planes, like there's multiple levels of my inquiry are present in this question. And one is the functional, like what functionally do you want to work on in your body? That may things like feeling more flexible, releasing some of the tension around your shoulders and neck. It may be things like getting stronger in your upper body. It may also be some of the things that people are learning about more and more and through things like somatic stretching and trauma research, that there are things that we can do that can help support our bodies to be more regulated. So things like circling the limbs or leaving circular pathways in space. So like circling the elbows and circling the head and the neck and circling the chest, that or finding the vagus nerve and breathing the connection between the brain and the heart along the vagus nerve that then continues through the rest of the body. That these are the internal emotional regulation can be really important part of a movement ritual. And then there's also the expressive or the metaphorical. And this is the part of the movement practice that is can be very personal and where the meaning comes in. And so say you want to feel more centered, you want to feel your core. Feeling your core is important. That may be bringing in some things where your hands massage the center of your body, or it may mean bringing in things where you find your hands and feet on walls and the floor and you push the hands and feet into the wall and into the floor so that you feel the push travel through the limbs into the core, and the core responds by like activating and hollowing and pushing back maybe. Or say that in feeling the core, you actually do some, what are in the Laban work, the core distal openings and closings, where you start on your back on the floor in a big X, and then you initiate the movement from the center of your body, and all of your limbs pull to the side in a little ball into the core, and then from the core, all the limbs open back out onto your back. So those would be some ways that you might help feel more centered, more aware of your alive, active core. Or maybe you want to feel invigorated, like woken up, like I don't need coffee anymore, but I need to feel invigorated. So maybe, and this may sound really silly, but you know, we are animals too. We are humans, and humans have an animalist nature. So maybe there's some pounding of your chest and some like noise, some sound that you make to get yourself active and alive, and that the pounding of your chest with your hands helps you feel your skin, it helps you feel your heart, it helps you feel the vibration inside your body becoming enlivened and alert. Also, maybe you want to do some shaking, like shaking your hands, shaking your head, shaking your feet. We definitely know from watching the animal kingdom that when animals experience something traumatic, when they have an activation of fight or flight, one of the things that their bodies do is discharge that activation by shaking. And so you might shake your hands, but you also could shake like inside the spine. You might shake your core, and this can bring an aliveness that helps to discharge and maybe reset, or brings a new cycle to any fight, fright, flee, fight, flight, freeze, fawn kind of responses, any worry that like loops that you're stuck in inside. You also may want something gentle and light. I mean, one part of my movement ritual is I love to give myself a ballet bar. It's very simple. It's about 13 to 15 minutes. It doesn't change very much, but there's a delicacy and a feminine nature to doing it. I love feeling the lightness in my fingertips. Love feeling how a ballet bar organizes my limbs to very specific linear places in space with a gentle, fluid movement. And I love that it brings out a feeling of being really feminine that I don't always get to experience in other parts of my days, especially when I'm doing a lot of more modern dance teaching and boxing, like, which is maybe an expression of, in a charge of aggression. It's hard. I feel my core, I feel my edges, I'm feeling my strength and my power there now, which is really different than the elongated out into space and the beyond lightness that comes with a ballet bar. So what expressively is important? And I'm hoping that as I give you some of these examples, that it's helping you think not just I need to lift weights and I need to run, but I also have this expressive, imagistic, metaphoric nature to my moving life that can also be supported by this movement ritual. And so I'm going to share with you a few more aspects of ones that have been my own or that I've given to others in the past that may help you as you get thinking about this and making your own. Another one that I have done on and off over the years is to massage my feet. And as I massage my feet, then as I plant them into the earth to say, you are here. You are here on this earth, in this body, in this life. So bringing myself through my feet into presence and helping me think of my feet like an electrician grounds the electrical current in a house that I can ground through my feet my own electrical current into the floor. Another one that I find that I really like is to be on four paws, so hands, knees, and feet all curled under, and sort of revving my engine, like pushing my body forward and back, and forward and back, and side, sliding my spine to one half of my body to the other. So it's like it goes to the left and right knee, and then it goes, or to the left hand and knee, and then to the right hand and knee, and that I can sort of rev or motivate my inner engine to start moving. Also in four paws, there's the cat-cow in yoga where head and tail go up, belly down, and then reverse, sort of doming and arcing the spine. But then also to swim through the spine. So this is more subtle. It's like the spine is hovering or floating between the arms and legs, and that you can initiate a movement from the tail that flows and sequences through to the head, or from the head that flows and sequences through to the tail, that you can circle through the chest or circle through the neck. You can circle through the lower back, like waking up the differentiation, the multiple parts of the spine. And, you know, one thing I will say is that when I work privately with people, it's so common. Most people that I encounter have a hard time moving and differentiating parts of their spine. It's almost like they've actually come to think of it as a backbone that doesn't have moving choices or parts. And so one of the things I often start early on with, beyond feeling yourself breathe, like, oh, the joy of feeling that I breathe, that I'm alive, is to feel the differentiation and snaking possibilities of the spine, the fluid possibilities, the soft, supple spine, as well as the strong, stable spine, which means that we, at our inner verticality, our deepest vertical core, are adaptable. We can have a strong spine when we need to, I have my backbone, or I can be supple and adaptable and accommodating, or occasionally maybe I'd want to be spineless and just give in to something, into the moment. I don't have to have a spine now, though usually I think we want some version of a supportive spine, but we have many possibilities and choices of how that lands. Some other things that I've been experimenting with myself and with my clients is spiraling and rotation. So spiraling and rotation is so important and needed for the body. We need to be able to rotate our joints. We need to be able to rotate our spine. And as we lose the capacity to do that, we are losing cognitive function in the brain. We're losing some of the neural pathways that we need to be able to read, to be able to write, to be able to focus, to be able to think complexly. We also really, really need it on a biomechanical level to be able to articulate rotation through our joints. And so that might mean like sticking the hands out to the side with soft elbows and rotating the hands and the arms all the way up into the shoulder joint. Another one I showed somebody the other day was laying on their back with their hands and feet dangling up to the ceiling. And first we just would shake it and shake it and shake it and then drop it and shake it and shake it and shake it, kind of invigorating and activating and energizing everything. And then again, laying after they dropped it a few times, laying on their back and again, soft elbows, soft knees, and almost imagining that their hands and feet were playing with a mobile, but not quite, so that they could feel the movement of the shoulders and the arms into the shoulders and the legs into the hips, that they could move and rotate those ball and socket joints. So rotation feels really, really important and really good. And then I guess one other one that I would add that I think can be really important is like anything that involves contact with your own body. So maybe the hands make loose fists and you're just gently pounding your muscles up against the bone. And you can actually kind of even think as you do this, like bone, 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 like the pulsing drumming of a loose fist is sending a message into the bone to feel itself. And that can help the body to feel both enlivened and also grounded, like the bones drop into their alignment and into the center. So that can feel good on the rib cage, it can feel good on the scalp, it can feel good on the feet, but loose, soft, pounding fists. And then also like hands that just sort of brush, like your fingertips just brush your skin, especially from like the middle of your back and lower back along and around the sides to the front. Anything that's brushing like that, brushing through the top of the head, that can help you feel much more alive and refreshed in yourself. So yeah, that's a lot of information about how you might design a movement practice for yourself. And we started with how you would get started with this. Like, it needs to be easy. The start, the initiation needs to be easy. And then you can go into the harder things, the push-ups, the squats, the jumping up and down the stairs, if you want to. It also needs to be adaptable so that you have the things that like you feel like you really always do, but that the ritual itself can morph as new sensations and new desires arise in you, that it can shift. You may have one that's longer, one that's shorter, or a couple different variations depending on how much time and space you have. And then we talked about how it's there's a lot of very functional ways to design these, and you could think about lifting weights, you could think about doing eye exercises, the very like, I do this and I hope to get this out of it. But then also the expressive, like what is needed on an expressive and metaphorical level. And that there's so, you can get creative. It might feel kind of silly, but you can get creative with this part of it, because there may be some things that you need to do in movement that bring you into an expressive, a juicy aliveness, like pounding your chest or howling at the moon or whatever, or even just gently laying your hands across your neck and then gliding them towards your heart and saying, my head, my brain listens to my heart. My heart sends messages to my brain. So you might be doing something very simple and confirming in that sense as well. Yeah, and then I shared with you some other options like lung stretches, circles with the joints, soft elbows and knees for rotation, four paws and articulating through the spine. And then it can also be really vigorous. It may involve running around the block. I've had one in the past where I ran around the block first thing and then did movement scales, which I'll talk about in another episode. But yeah, movement rituals and practices, they are like a way of remembering yourself. And so the thing that I want to close with is something that I started with in the beginning, and this feels a little bit like an addendum, but it's not. I also didn't want to confuse it, but I do want to leave with this, which is that there's something in the Laban system that we talk about, which are movement mantras. And these are short, simple, repeatable movement phrases that have some expressive meaning for you that help you come back into yourself. And this may be different than the movement ritual, and it may be part of it. But a movement mantra is like, it can be very simple, like a gesture that you give into yourself or you've created for yourself that brings you back or brings you out into the world. And so, for example, one gesture that I have, and I'll do my best to describe it, maybe you can do it with me or try it, which is where my hand, usually just my right hand, gently curls into a spiral into a like a gentle fist near my chest. And that's something that I've started doing a long time ago as a way to say to myself, okay, bring it together now. And not just like, maybe it's coming into myself, or it's also like, okay, slow down, bring that idea together, come back into the moment. Another, so a soft, gentle hand that comes in. Another one, that this is from Chantal Smith. She is an IMS graduate, CLMA, who I believe she made it where she would bring her hands towards her face gently, like the palms towards the face and then in. And then they would flip so the palms face the floor and the fingertips would lead her out. So it was like, come into yourself, go out into the world. senses of the head end, so the eyes, nose, and mouth drain in. I'm in myself, I know my inner wisdom, and then I can take it out into the world. And so finally, one more movement mantra that I will share is to feel my big toes and the inner arches of my feet ground into the earth. And so this is one that I do sometimes when I'm writing and I'm starting to feel all a little too fast or all over the place, or I need to focus, as I just insert some pressure in my feet, especially my big toes and arches, into the ground. And I'm like, here, focus, here, focus. And that mantra brings me back into the attention that I need to get something done. So there you have it. The development of a movement practice, as well as this bit at the end about a mantra, which are these simple movements that we do that have something very meaningful that helps us navigate the moment and our lives. Okay, thank you so much for listening to Embodied People. If you're interested in IMS, we have a website that's totally under construction right now. It's very minimal. We are working to build it back up, but that is imsmovement.com. And I am leading a retreat in Maine the first week in June. It's really affordable. We're going to be at this spectacular estate on the coast, and we will be doing things like this, like developing movement rituals and immersing our bodies in the incredible coastal landscape as a way to bring what we're working on in our bodies into more fully lived out practice and a deepened connection with the natural world, with the elements and material of the world around us. So if you're interested in that, you can send me an email or find information at Arts at Alfred Summer Workshops. But it's June 3rd through 7th, and it's just a delight. So there you have it. Thank you for listening. More next week.